Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
Brian Lehrer on WNYC. Hello, everyone, and welcome to the day after Labor Day. If you are just back from wherever, hope your summer travels have been fantastic. And welcome to an important political time for New York and America. The New York primary is 1 week today. If you haven't been paying attention yet and you're a voter in New York, time to start paying attention. The national midterm elections in November will determine how much of the Obama agenda gets to go forward and how much of the Republican agenda. And as we enter this political season, we will, of course, cover the issues and the politics on this show every day. And we have something brand new for you beginning today. We invite you to visit our new website, It's a Free Country. It is on the homepage at WNYC.org. We have political news and guest bloggers. I will have a one-question news and politics quiz every day this week. My question today is about how you will vote on the New York City voting machines that are being introduced. We have blogs from our political reporters, Bob Henley and Ozzie Pabura. And we have three guest bloggers with different things to say. It's a free country. We have a video with Ozzie and me showing you how the brand new New York State voting machines will work or not work. We got to take them for a test ride the other day, and I'd say there is some trouble ahead for primary day next week. Ozzie and I will talk about that in a minute. There's a lot of new technology confusion, we suspect, but we also have an annotated ballot on the site showing some of the pitfalls that you may encounter the first time out, so check it out. It's a free country. We are even launching a thread about the state of our democracy called It's a Free Country, or Is It? News, politics, opinion, and lots of stuff for you to do. For day one, you can talk back to our guest bloggers. You can suggest a question for our Attorney General candidates debate tomorrow in the green space. And we ask, what does the phrase It's a Free Country mean to you? It's a Free Country. Check it out at WNYC.org. And we'll talk to guest blogger David Webb in a few minutes. With us now are WNYC political reporters Bob Henley and Ozzie Pabura. Good morning, Ozzie. Good morning, Bob.
Good morning.
Good morning.
And listeners, will put out one of those questions to you right now, the same question that we put to our bloggers for day one. What's broken with American politics and what's needed to fix it? Answer that any way you want as we talk about some specifics here as well along the way. What's broken with American politics and what's needed to fix it? You can call us up, 212-433-WNYC, 212-433-9692, or you can answer that question right on our site. It's a free country at WNYC.org. Ozzie, let's talk about those voting machines we got to try out. New York State is moving on, in case people don't know, from the old clunky lever-activated voting machines that I think were invented by the founding fathers. I think Benjamin Franklin.
There were some found in caves along with artistic renderings along the wall.
Yeah, I heard Benjamin Franklin just before he discovered electricity. So people from Montauk to Buffalo will have a new voting experience in New York State. If you show up on primary day next Tuesday, what was it like for you?
It was exciting to see something new and a little bit confusing. The ballot is a large paper ballot, and it looks like the kind of Scantron that you had during the SATs. which may or may not have been a pleasurable experience. But
except instead of number two pencils, they have pens with ink attached by chains to desks.
Yes, yes. Just like a bank when they used to make you fill out those kind of forms. And, you know, for somebody like me who's used to reading a lot of material online, you know, getting a large piece of paper with small print writing with boxes here and there was a little bit confusing. And then I absentmindedly glanced at the back of the ballot and just thought all that small writing back there was actually instructions that I didn't need to read. And it turns out they were actually some ballot initiative questions where my vote was actually being asked for, and I just completely missed it.
Disenfranchised at such an early time.
Right on day one. And that's probably not going to be relevant for the primary. I think there are no ballot questions on primary day. There will be in November.
Right.
In New York City, at very least, with some charter revision up and maybe some other things around the state, I'm not sure. But so if you're in New York City, your first reminder here well in advance of November 2nd to turn the ballot over. And you mentioned the fine print. For people with impaired vision or whose, you know, ability to read without high-power reading glasses is diminishing, we saw that there will be a magnifying glass, actually an 8.5 by 11 full
right.
page size magnifying glass, I guess, at each voting station.
Yes, and I normally have a reluctance to use any kind of reading aid because I just think I can see what I'm reading. But the actual thing is you have to take your time and read everything that's there. And for people that live kind of a fast-paced life, we're used to things being very automatic. That type of time it takes to read something is incredibly important. Now, this election year, possibly more than in previous years.
Do you have reading glasses, but you actually decline to wear them?
No, but I may need, you know, instead of reading glasses, somebody just telling me to read the fine print.
Yes. I was that kid, that classic kid, when I got glasses for the first time in sixth grade because they told me I needed them for distance. I was like, no, I am not wearing glasses. You can make them. I'm going to put them in my drawer. I am not reading the glasses. And then when they came in, I put them on, and I was like, whoa, what is all that out there?
Well, I also buy them Costco volume, and I put them everywhere that's essential because I can't – I use them all the time.
Reading glasses get lost, yeah. But how to vote on these ballots, as I said before, is my first quiz question on It's a Free Country. And there's a video by our Jen Hsu, which has some fun with Ozzie and me competing over whether to use the touchscreen or the pen and ink voting method. But the first thing to know is that there is a paper ballot that you can either write on with a pen, as you were just describing, or insert into a touchscreen machine. And the existence of the paper ballot is new.
Right. Before, you would just walk into a booth and in front of you would be this large, you know, kind of ballot with these rows and levers, and you would click and turn and just pick which one you want. Now, there's no ballot, no booth. You walk into you walk to a desk, basically, and you just fill out this form. You read both sides, and you sort of mark your answers right there. There's no booth. There's no levers. There's nothing really mechanical that you're interacting with.
And after the Bush-Gore debacle of 2000, federal law required all states to convert to voting systems using paper ballots in one way or another, Bob. And the new system in New York has it. So you can vote either by pen or, as I said, by inserting the paper into a touchscreen voting machine. They're actually encouraging people to use the pens as much as possible.
Yeah, what I'm wondering about is the turnover of the workforce, too, the degree to which they've been able to invest in educating the people that are going to be actually on the front lines come Election Day, because it's already a tough enough challenge, even with the old machines and the technology the same. I mean, one of the biggest stumbling blocks is when people come in and present themselves, their name isn't on the rolls, and they're entitled to what's called a provisional ballot. And you'd be surprised on Election Day how often we've gone around and found really sketchy sense of that information. A lot of polling places may not know that. And so that's with the old machines. Throw in the mix this new technology, and it's anyone's guess how it will turn out.
And as the video and annotated ballot we have on the site demonstrate, it could get confusing when people vote because of the lines on the paper ballot not being totally clear, I think, on one where one race ends and another begins. And Ozzie, for me and you who use touchscreen telephones, I think the touchscreen – we were going in thinking, oh, cool, touchscreen.
I think Bob is using a touchscreen phone at the moment.
Yes, that's right.
Bob multitasking
right.
while being a guest on the show. But the touchscreen method kind of obscures a lot of the ballot that you're trying to understand. Very
right.
narrow focus on one race at a time. The opposite of what you might think from a touch screen if you use an iPhone or something. It's very slow. And they actually do encourage you to use the paper ballot. So who's the touch screen actually for?
I believe the touch screen is for people that are either visually impaired or have some type of impediment to filling out a paper ballot. Now, what I would argue is that the touch screen might actually be for able-bodied young people. I'm actually picturing myself and even my younger brother, who's 21, who grew up dealing with computers possibly more than he dealt with, you know, physical newspapers and books and things of that nature, where you're accustomed to taking in information online in that type of format.
Brian Lehrer on WNYC with our political reporters, Ozzie Pabra and Bob Henley. We're inviting you, in conjunction with the launch of our new political site, It's a Free Country, to call up and tell us what you think is broken with our political system and what you think is needed to fix it. 212-433-WNYC, 212-433-9692. And our first shot at that is going to come from Willie in Saugerties. Willie, you're on WNYC. Hi.
Good morning, Brian. Good morning. Actually, you kind of stole my thunder. As soon as you said it's a free country, I've been walking around with this idea that I really have to pursue, but I want to make a T-shirt. And in the front, it's going to say, it's a free country. But in the back, it's going to say, but you're not free to be ignorant.
Uh-huh.
And really, that is the real issue, because this freedom that we're providing for our citizens, you know, they're choosing to be ignorant. And guess what? As a result, we're spending huge amounts of money on, you know, all kinds of examples I can give you, just by the sheer fact that you have to explain somebody, you know, an issue that he has to vote on, or translating, English into other languages, or, in other words, all sorts of issues that, in essence, are calling for every citizen the responsibility of getting information for the sake of all of us.
Well, Willie, I'm going to leave it there. Thank you very much. And well, Willie wants more people to do the work, get informed.
I think the problem is that, and we've talked about this before on this program, what's happening in terms of political reporting is, especially in the mainstream commercial media, is it's what you do is it's very cheap to produce. You get people that represent the polar opposites, the most hard-edged left and right individuals, usually paid for by a think tank that reflects those points of view, have them go at each other and try to decimate one another into a puddle of tears, and that drives ratings. Now, what comes out is a whole bunch of heat but not a lot of light, and so you don't really get into the substantial discussions of the issues of the day, and so our politics begin to reflect that polarity, and it dominates it and frames it.
And on It's a Free Country, you'll see right at the top, we invite people to come and, number one, read so you get informed. Number two, argue. Absolutely. Go on the participation pages there and argue with each other. But number three, listen so that you don't just try to pin each other to the mat, kind of like we try to do on this show, to listen as well as argue and then act. We've got some ways to participate in the political process. But actually listen to each other. I know it's really. And Georgia Northport has a voting machine comment. Hi, Georgia, on WNYC.
Hi, Brian. Thanks for a great show. I've tuned in over the years when I can.
Thank you.
As you probably know, there's a pretty big argument going on in the background, mostly on the Internet, about the what they call black box voting machines, which, as I mentioned to your screener, probably is a magician's dream come true. You vote on the outside, but you never get to see what's on the inside. It's proprietary code. And I would just encourage all people who are concerned with the future of the politics in our state, our city, our country, to become aware of the controversy, the fact that Princeton researchers, for instance, recently hacked the Pac-Man game onto one of these computers without breaking the seals.
Did you vote for Pac-Man or Ms. Pac-Man?
It's been a long time. I'll have to brush up on their position.
I'm going to write in Blinky. George, thank you very much for your call. We'll take a break, and then we will continue with Bob and Ozzie, and we will bring in one of our first guest bloggers on It's a Free Country, David Webb. Stay with us. Brian Lehrer on WNYC as we talk politics here 1 week before the New York primary. By the way, next hour we will talk to Rick Lazio, Republican gubernatorial hopeful, and we'll bring on guest blogger who is from the New York branch of the Tea Party. Believe it or not, there was a Manhattan Tea Party event last week. How's that for an oxymoron? We'll talk to David Webb, an organizer of that, in a couple of minutes. As we also introduce our new politics website, It's a Free Country, and you can see it on our homepage at WNYC.org. Bob, you have the first ever news analysis on It's a Free Country. And by the way, great headshot. Listeners, you can see a photo of the man who single-handedly keeps the shoe leather business in the black, Bob Henley. And the title of your piece is Stuck Nation. One word, Stuck Nation, like Stuck Ameristan. Where are we stuck?
I think, you know, if you go back to 2008 and the tremendous sense of possibility that existed after the election of President Obama, there was a sense there that we were going to turn the page nationally. And we are still really stuck in the key economic indicators. Middle-class households that were listening to the Democrats would have anticipated, for instance, a realignment in the relationship between the big capital interest in this country and their own well-being. And what we've seen is employers are sitting on huge amounts of cash because there's a certain kind of anxiety across the land. People are working harder, more anxious about their jobs. They're paying more for health care than they did before, and employers are passing it on to them. The Obamacare, the watershed legislation that was passed, is still largely theoretical. We haven't felt the impact of it. And the White House made a calculated bet, which was really poignantly described in Jonathan Alter's book, The Promise, where they made a calculated bet that if they took care of the big item, which is health care reform, somehow it would save the economy. It looks right now, headed into this midterm, with an economy that's still losing more jobs than it's generating, that they made a bad bet.
And you tell the story of a day this summer when the president came to New Jersey and you covered him at a sandwich shop in Edison, and you thought that said something about him as a communicator.
Well, I think what happened there was that there were hundreds of people that showed up spontaneously to express support for the president, including a gentleman who was disabled, whose mother had died, and against all odds had gotten that very week his mortgage modified, a success story. And he was pushed away by the Secret Service blocks and blocks away. And so the images coming out of that day was not supporters and success stories interacting with the president, but a very canned event where we were brought in. I was part of the White House pool, permitted to take pictures of the president ordering a sandwich, then removed hermetically away from that. And then he had a spontaneous interaction, evidently, with some business people. Then we were brought in for him to kind of read a canned comment. So you never got any of that real interaction that would have given you a sense of a leader in action.
I want to take one more voting machine call before we bring in David Webb. Edwin in Manhattan, you're on WNYC. Hi.
Hi, I'd like to ask you several quick questions. Number one, is there a privacy area where people can go in a corner somewhere and vote by pen? That's number one. Number two, if you're using the machine, is anybody standing behind you can see who you voted for? And number three, what happens to the paper? Do you give it to somebody, or do you fold it and put it in a bowling box?
These are all great questions, and they're all different from the way it was in the past. If you vote by paper, you then insert it into the voting machine, the touchscreen voting machine. You insert it like you would insert a piece of paper into a printer feeder, let's say. But Ozzie, on the privacy question, if you're voting by paper, do I understand this correctly? There are actually sort of guards or monitors or counsel, what would you call them? Hallway monitors who stand behind
ballot
you?
Ballot minders.
Yes. Sentries. Bodyguards.
For the sake of privacy?
There are actual, Board of Election officials that are standing by ready to assist throughout the polling location. There actually is, when you walk up to your designated desk space to mark your ballot, if you're doing it by pen, there are actually supposed to be some type of partitions on either side of the desk that give you some level of privacy. But you're also, very importantly, given what they're calling a privacy sleeve, which we all know as a manila folder or envelope. So you take your paper, slip it in between this folder, you sort of fold it up, and the only thing that people see is that you actually have a ballot, but they don't see what is on your ballot. And then you take that to your respective machine and slide it in. So there actually is a good deal of privacy.
What's wrong with our political system? You'll see from Manhattan writes on our site, two problems. A, campaign finance allows corporations to buy politicians. B, disproportionate representation in the Senate. One Wyoming conservative equals 70 California liberals, he writes, as well as pointing out the filibuster fixes. He says, do what England does, $100,000 cap on spending and or public financing, and declaring that the Bill of Rights are for natural persons and not corporate persons. But our next guest may disagree with that as we launch our fall political coverage on this day after Labor Day and our new politics website called It's a Free Country. Also joining us now is one of the featured guest bloggers on the site. He is David Webb, a New York-based co-founder of the group Tea Party 365. He's also host of the David Webb Show on Sirius XM Patriot Radio. David, thanks so much for joining us. Welcome to WNYC.
Well, thanks for having me, Brian, and congratulations.
Thank you very much. You held something last week that many listeners may consider an oxymoron, a Manhattan Tea Party event. So how's the Tea Party doing in New York, New York? What does it have to offer an urban and urbane Manhattanite?
Well, I mean, it's actually doing quite well, and it's doing so because we're staying on top of the policy rather than the party issues. You referenced the forum last week. Well, that was the first time, I think, in New York politics, in my memory, that candidates sat on equal footing with no preconditions, with no sense of the questions that were coming to them. And by the way, we invited everyone to that forum, Democrats, Independents, the Conservative Party, the GOP, and it was open to everyone. It was a public and open invitation because it's time that people get the answers they want from the candidates, not about what they want to do for you, but how are they going to do it. It's one thing to express your desire, but you really have to have the ability to do the job.
And we're in the same business in that respect, if you're holding open forums and inviting everybody. And listeners, we said argue but listen. So this is your opportunity. If you've never spoken to a Tea Party organizer before, call up and talk to David Webb. Argue with him, but also listen to him if you're not on his side. 212-433-WNYC, 212-4-NEW-YORK, Tea Party organizer, David Webb, 212-433-9692. Bob Henley?
I just want to say that I experienced this firsthand at the Morristown Green with a very dynamic Tea Party event that was organized there, where candidates were held accountable. And it was a little, for a political reporters used to a kind of state environment, League of Women Voters, people would, if they weren't answering the questions, the crowd would hold them accountable. It was a little unruly. But the politicians had to, and this is a gubernatorial contest, they had to be forthcoming in the moment to that constituency. And it was interesting to see.
And David, just to put you in a little more context, I also gathered that you are one Tea Party leader who does not necessarily consider Carl Paladino your gubernatorial candidate. Is that correct?
Well, it's my issue with Carl isn't so much his candidacy. He has a right to do that as an American. My issue as an organization was his attempt to co-opt the Tea Party movement and use it for his candidacy. It's one thing if other Tea Party groups choose to support him. That's the right of every American organization. But he attempted quite clearly, and in his own press releases and his own answers on interviews, to co-opt it and say that I am the Tea Party movement, which by that action is contradictory to a citizens' movement.
And the event, again, featured Republican gubernatorial hopeful Rick Lazio, who is not generally considered the Tea Party candidate. Paladino is. And you locked Paladino and his running mate out of that event, according to what I read, because they didn't meet an RSVP deadline. Do I have that right?
Well, you have it partially right. The part is I didn't lock him out of it. I posted the email chain on our website, teaparty365.org, for everyone to see. Carl Paladino declined our invitation. It was, as I said, it was an invitation to all candidates running for all offices. In that email, he says quite clearly, Carl has a conflict. His campaign manager, Michael Caputo, wrote in response that he has a conflict and cannot attend. After I released the list of panelists, and in order to have a true Socratic forum, you have to have a limited amount of panelists and you have to break them up accordingly. After it was announced and he saw Lazio, I began to get the blowback, if you want to call it, from them. And they went out and said that we had excluded them, we had orchestrated this with Lazio. Well, I believe in transparency. So I put all the emails for everyone to read. And it's very clear. I excluded no one. We left it open. But you can't bully your way into something. You don't have the benefit of saying, I'm not coming. And then, oh, I want to cause something, so now I want to come.
So you heard Lazio. Was his presentation something that should give him Tea Party cred? And are you personally endorsing in the primary?
No, we're not. What we're endorsing are the people. The people need to educate themselves and hold these candidates and these officials accountable. Our job as an organization, one of our key jobs, is education. The elections come after that, but people have to have the education and the right amount of knowledge about each candidate, and then they can go and vote. If you want to call yourself a Tea Party candidate, go right ahead. But let me say this to the people listening. No matter what organization on either side of the aisle endorses a candidate, that should not be the basis for your vote. The facts about that candidate should be the basis for your vote.
Lisa in Manhattan, you're on WNYC with New York Tea Party organizer David Webb and our Ozzie Paper and Bob Henley. Hello.
Yes. Mr. Webb, we heard from General David Petraeus this morning that burning of the Quran in Florida could endanger our troops.
Planned by one obscure pastor, not obscure anymore because he's getting so much media attention, on 9/11, yes.
Yes. Is there any chance that he could say that the Tea Party stands with military families, that we all care about our troops in Afghanistan? That General Petraeus this morning said that could be very inflammatory, that it isn't going to help, that it really might hurt, that the Tea Party does not endorse it. Thank you.
You're familiar with the issue, David?
Yeah, I'm more than familiar with the issue, and I think there also needs to be a clear separation of some things. And this has also been done badly by some Tea Party groups by getting off of the founding principles and the issues they should work on. I agree, and I understand the general's point of view. And certainly the gentleman in Florida, the minister, has his First Amendment right to do what he will. I do understand the threat to the troops. I have friends who are in and out of Afghanistan and Iraq, and they face it on a daily basis. But you should not mix the Tea Parties in with this. This is an issue that is being seen on both sides by a commanding general with a clear concern that he has demonstrated that his first responsibility is to his troops, and I want it to be that way. But we cannot at the same time mix in the Tea Parties with someone's First Amendment right down in Florida. It's inflammatory. Given the choices, I would say personally, I would not do that because we already have an inflamed situation. But I understand the anger that comes from some people, even when I don't agree with it.
Would you have this much equanimity if somebody was going to burn a Bible?
Yes, because in truth, we can't stop them. Constitutionally, they have that right. Look, let's go to something more obvious, the flag. It is disgusting to me when somebody burns an American flag. However, they have that right.
Maybe not all Tea Partiers would agree that they should. But Ozzie, go ahead. Ozzie Paper.
I don't think they should burn it. Let me be clear.
Should have that right is what
But they have that right constitutionally.
Ozzie?
I was just going to ask, Mr. Webb, if you felt that there was any kind of tension between, like the Tea Party's desire for limited government and protection of civil liberties versus the cultural wedge issues like burning of a Quran or what people are saying about the quote unquote the mosque at Ground Zero, the Islamic Center there, that seems to have galvanized a lot of people that identify themselves as Tea Party members.
And David, just to expand on that question a little bit from me, the Tea Party in the early interviews that I did with Tea Partiers last year, it kept coming up that this was supposed to be about limited government and limited government only, and they were going to be agnostic on social issues like abortion and gay rights and things like that. Now all of a sudden there seems to be a lot of Tea Party individuals, at least, speaking out against the Lower Manhattan Islamic Cultural Center?
Well, and that's a fair question. There are people who identify themselves, and it's a good way to get attention by saying the Tea Party and my Tea Party group is against this. Americans have spoken out against the mosque or the planned Islamic Cultural Center. I oppose it on the basis of appropriateness. It's not a constitutional argument. We don't have to prove our religious tolerance in America. That's a fact, and it's guaranteed and protected. But there are, again, individuals who will take, and maybe this is a cautionary tale, more so for the Tea Parties, as I've said before, stick with what you're supposed to be doing. Now, my organization has thousands of New Yorkers. This is of interest to them. If there's information about a rally, I put it out there because it's information they should have. You can be involved with it as a New Yorker because it's important to your members without getting into the weeds of the issue.
I was wondering, this is Bob Henley, I was wondering to what degree is the lack of an institutional party, like the conservatives have a party. So you can have a platform, you can have a vote, you can have a battle, and you can have a process for defining what the party stands for. It seems to some way that there's it's a conundrum because on one hand, the flexibility that this kind of movement offers to people means you can really have a very broad base. But when it comes to trying to define it for the purpose of giving people a sense of what you're about, it's a real challenge.
Well, I don't think so. And I think it's pretty well defined by its founding principles. This was an idea that was born out of frustration with government, not with either party, but with government, with spending. Granted, we've seen an incredible increase in the Obama administration. But this is about limited, effective, efficient, and constitutional government, free enterprise, and liberty. It's very well defined in that respect. When you start mixing other things into it, I have been working on the Islamist issue for years, long before there were the Tea Parties. That doesn't mean that I can't be involved in one and involved in the other. We just have to keep clear lines, and I think it is well defined, but we have found some groups, and I have spoken to a couple of the leaders of these groups and asked them, what exactly do you mean when you take your Tea Party group and say I'm having a Tea Party rally against the mosque? What's your angle? And they haven't been able to answer that clearly within the Tea Party definition.
Here's another caller trying to answer the question, what's broken with American politics, that we have on our Free Country site today. Rob in the Bronx, you're on WNYC. Hi, Rob.
Hi, how are you doing, Brian?
Good.
Just wanted to say, I think that there's some of the focus is really being taken off. Something that I still see is the persistent problem in local and national politics, which is the graft and patronage system. And then the thing to fix it is comprehensive total campaign finance reform. I mean, I see it in local Democratic politics in the Bronx, and I see it at the national level as well with legislation that specifically excludes certain companies and certain industries. And I wonder what the Tea Party would, what David Webb would say about that as being the persistent problem, because it seems to me like the conservatives had always resisted campaign finance reform, but yet at the same time, I think it's the best way for good government.
David, you got the question, and Rob, thanks a lot for your call.
You know, in order to enact campaign finance reform, and this is something for years I've been preaching, praying, and advocating for all three, you have to get the agreement of the very people who benefit from the lack of campaign finance reform. I think we need steps in that process. One step would be that you can only raise money within your district for your candidacy. We put steps in the way, then you're held accountable to the people who have to first support you and elect you, or the companies in your district, whatever that district may look like. That's one thing we need to do. We absolutely need some form of campaign finance reform.
We're going to run out of time soon, but is this also a strain that you consider strong in the Tea Party movement, being skeptical of big business at the same time that you're skeptical of big government?
I would say...
Or is big business, you know, as we would hear on some other people's conservative talk shows, you have yours on Sirius, and I think some other people would say, Rush Limbaugh, for example, would say big business is what's great about America. It shows that people can be really, really successful, and so their businesses become big.
Yeah, and that is an accurate point. I mean, big business is what hires, creates a lot of wealth, and keeps America moving in many ways, whether it's manufacturing, technology, or Wall Street. Unregulated and unrestricted to a point where it is onerous, That's when we need proper regulation. We don't need to pile on FinReg on top of TARP, on top of existing regulations. We don't enforce the existing ones. And we, instead of sunsetting or adjusting, we end up taking these regulations and making it so that you can't even get something done.
Seen at grassroots Tea Party movements in New Jersey and demonstrations is a real skepticism about large banks and even calling out the linkages between the campaign finance reform system, the need for reform, and the fact that the existing situation is a product of a corrupt system where politicians are getting the money from the very institutional interests that they're supporting with their decisions.
So, Bob, you as a reporter think that the Tea Party could be fertile ground for campaign finance reform support that you know does not see all campaign donations as free speech protected by the First Amendment, that is concerned about overwhelming the political system with big corporate money.
Right. I mean, I've seen that coming from the grassroots of the movements I've covered.
And we will leave it there. If you want to hear more from David Webb, you can listen to his talk show on Sirius XM's Patriot Channel. You can also read his blog. He is one of several guest bloggers we have on our brand new politics website. It's a free country. David Webb, thank you so much for coming on with us.
Thank you, Brian.
And Ozzie Paper, our political reporter, Bob Henley, our political reporter, thank you very much. And again, listeners, we have just launched our new politics website. It's a free country. We have a lot to read there and a lot for you to do after listening to this conversation we just had. Go and see if you can answer my one-question politics quiz. Check out the video of Ozzie and me as well, trying to use the new voting machines. I will say that Ozzie bears a certain resemblance to one kind of computer, and I do to another in that video. Suggest a question for our New York State Attorney General candidates debate tomorrow, or answer the question, what does the phrase, it's a free country, mean to you? And read Bob's and Ozzie's and David Webb's blog posts and much more. WNYC.org, you will see It's a Free Country right on the homepage.